welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Tuesday, November 14, 2023. The UN Refugee Agency says the ongoing fighting in Sudan has affected thousands of families in Darfur.
The reports that we have right now are that more than 800 people have been reportedly killed by armed groups in a location called Ardamata, and this is in West Darfur.
And authorities in Maban County in Upper Nile State say they are fighting with mosquitoes.
Since the month of July up to now, approximately 70 to 75% of the cases that we have been seeing in the outpatient department have been malaria cases.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The United Nations Refugee Agency, UNHCR, is expressing concern over increasing violence and human rights abuses against civilians in Darfur. The UNHCR regional spokesperson in Nairobi, Kenya, says hundreds of people have reportedly been killed by armed groups in West Darfur in recent days, in addition to other human rights abuses committed against civilians. For VOA News, Charlton Doki reports from Juba.
Faith Kasina, UNHCR's regional spokesperson for East, Horn of Africa and the Great Lakes, says armed groups have killed several hundred people in recent days in Darfur.
The reports that we have right now are that more than 800 people have been reportedly killed by armed groups in a location called Ardamata, and this is in West Darfur, an area that has so far been less impacted or affected by the conflict. It's difficult to know the exact numbers, but these are the reports that we are getting, which are definitely very alarming.
Speaking via a messaging application from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, Kasina says UNHCR fears that as the conflict continues, many more people will lose their lives in Darfur. She describes the situation as dire. She adds that aside from the killings, UNHCR has had reports of widespread human rights violations, including sexual violence, torture and lootings in parts of Darfur that were previously relatively stable and less impacted by the conflict. Kasina adds that UNHCR is aware that some specific groups of people are being targeted because of their ethnicity. VOA reached out to Brigadier General Nabil Abdallah, spokesperson of the Sudan Armed Forces, for comment, but did not receive a response. Similarly, Yusuf Ezzat, the political advisor for Rapid Support Forces Commander Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, did not respond to VOA's request for comment. But in a media statement yesterday, the RSF expressed condolences to the families of people killed in Ardamata. The RSF accused the Sudan Armed Forces of deliberately killing civilians while incriminating the RSF. The statement said, the SAF military intelligence and its extremist allies have historically used tactics involving liquidating innocent civilians in West Darfur over the past 30 years. These actions, intended to fuel tribal conflicts and create animosity between the RSF and local communities, have failed to mislead the Sudanese people, end quote. The UNHCR's Kasina says some people who were internally displaced are being secondarily displaced from the areas where they had found refuge.
We are also getting reports that people who were once forced to flee, who are internally displaced, now are finding themselves having to leave the particular site that they had found refuge in, because the conflict has reached in one way or the other in the area that they were seeking refuge and protection, and now they have to move to another location.
UNHCR says to end the violence and human rights abuses, the parties to the conflict should ensure an immediate end to the fighting.
We have continued to reiterate that the fighting must stop across Sudan. that people must be allowed to seek safety, whether it's inside Sudan or across borders. We have continued to reiterate the calls for people to find safety wherever they are, to be able to access humanitarian aid and assistance so that they can survive. So the primary thing is that the conflict must end. It has been more than 6 months. The suffering must come to an end.
UNHCR is calling on all parties to the conflict to uphold their obligations under international humanitarian law, which includes allowing people and civilians to safely leave areas that have been hit by the conflict and seek safety. Kasina says the parties to the conflict should also unconditionally respect civilians and avoid innocent people being caught in the crossfire in the conflict. For VOA News, I'm Charlton Doki in Juba.
My colleague Esther Gitui-Eward spoke with Dr. Amar Humaida, the healthcare programs director at the Sudanese American Physicians Association, for a look into the state of healthcare system across Sudan.
The health system in Sudan, unfortunately, totally collapsed. More than 80% of the services that was actually located in Khartoum State are right now out of service. Even those are remaining that 20%, unfortunately, have been continuously harassed from the different arteries that have been unfortunately shot directly to those hospitals and healthcare workers, including, by the way, the conflict that or the atrocity that you highlighted in Darfur, which has like some sort of genocide related and ethnic cleansing. Unfortunately, people were killing inside hospitals, bodies thrown out of the streets. There is no basic infrastructure that could secure safe water, that could secure full availability for the people whom have been affected. Unfortunately, also, after more than 8 months of this conflict, we started to see post-traumatic stress disorders. People are started to realize that this unfortunate fighting between the two generals is not going to end soon. And unfortunately, they don't have the will, to cease fire and to look at their people.
Doctor, if you can briefly tell us what you are doing. I know in the past you've supported the only pediatric hospital remaining in Sudan. What kind of support is SAPA giving the doctors there, the medical facilities in terms of medicine, equipment? And as the weather pattern changes, what is the most important thing that needs to be done to prevent diseases from spreading?
Right now, SAPA is doing the best possible to mobilize resources from Sudanese doctors who are able to support the people of Sudan, where we have like some sort of secured humanitarian corridors. So we are working right now in six safe states where it has like the huge amount of displaced, internally displaced people. We are trying the best possible to provide services that could support the availing quality health services for the people whom has been displaced, especially where we have like some sort of momentum for healthcare services, specifically in Jazeera State, Northern State, Red Sea State, and White Nile. We were working on the Darfur states, but unfortunately, due to the different nonsense attacks on civilians and hospitals, our services has been disrupted in South Darfur. And unfortunately, we lost, people who were directly contacted. We were having like some sort of support for them, especially, our healthcare workers lost their loved ones in Nyala, which has affected directly the service availability on those locations. So I really... I feel I'm sort of ashamed of the situation of the healthcare services in Sudan because of the different disruption that workers have been seeing.
That's Dr. Amar Humaida, the healthcare programs director at the Sudanese American Physicians Association. He was speaking to VOA's Esther Gitui-Ewart on Monday. Some school-going children in South Sudan are calling on the government to guarantee their right to access to education. The children said armed conflict, poverty, sexual exploitation, early marriages, and some cultural practices remain obstacles to education in the country. The undersecretary in South Sudan's Ministry of General Education and Instruction says the government is working to build more schools and recruit trained teachers to ensure children have access to good quality education. For VOA News, Viola Elias reports from Juba.
School-age children from Virus State in South Sudan are raising concern over the challenges they face in trying to access education. The children make these remarks during a child-led parliamentary session organized by aid group Save the Children in Juba recently. 16-year-old Mary, who hails from Yei River County in South Sudan's Central Equatoria State, says teachers need the right training to allow them to provide a good education to children. She calls on the government to build more teachers' training colleges. Mary says low pay for teachers and delay in paying their salaries contribute to the deteriorating education system in the country.
But how do we feel when teachers are underpaid? This affects education system. Let's take an example. If their wages are being undercut, you may find that teachers, they will take their own time to enter into classes.
17-year-old John says the Ministry of General Education and Instruction has done little to address challenges facing school-age children, especially those living with physical disabilities. He says some children have taken it upon themselves to stand up for the less privileged children in South Sudan.
The kids are crying outside there that they do not have access to education, but no one has tried to think of that. They are the disabled. We mean still seeing that disability is not inability, but no one. There are those who are being mistreated by the negative traditional norms, the cultures, and no one has mind of them. And we, the children of South Sudan, today have decided to talk on their fear since they are voiceless.
14-year-old Josephine, another student, says parents should not use gender to determine whether to send a child to school. She says parents should give both their sons and daughters equal rights to education. Josephine stresses that some South Sudanese cultural norms still hold girls behind in the educational race.
We have some cultures that do retain girls from going to school. Our own cultures in South Sudan, there are some of the cultures that do say that girls are for the kitchen and then boys are the ones that should go to school. Children that are girls are not supposed to be left out of school. Our children are given out for marriage just because they say that they are girls. You have to understand this. A lady who is a little bit educated is far better than a man who is having a diploma.
In response to the children concerned, the undersecretary in the Ministry of General Education and Instruction, Kuyok Abul Kuyok, says the government is working to improve both access to schools and the quality of education across the country.
We need to get money to build schools. We have to recruit teachers. We have to train teachers. We must bring textbooks for everybody. We must ensure that all the children in South Sudan are getting education. They are getting quality education, not just attending classrooms or attending schools. So these are all things that we have to do.
David Barth, Vice President of Save the Children US, says all children have rights to education.
I will go away from here, speaking aggressively about the importance of access to education for every child and improvement in the quality of the there. Every child in this country needs access, and that includes children with abilities and children with disabilities. Each one of them is as important as that. That's important. And as we talk together in the future about quality education, we are appreciative of what you said about and teachers.
Save the Children pilots and coordinate a child parliamentary initiative in 5 of South Sudan's 10 states. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, authorities in Maban County in Upper Nile State say they are fighting with mosquitoes in that area. Stay tuned for that story after the break. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Authorities in Mabang County in Upper Nile State say several people are dying from malaria in the area. A county executive director says the area has low supply of medicine, leaving the population at risk of diseases. For VOA News, Manyang, David Meyer reports from Mabang.
Angelina Phillips' nine-year-old son was diagnosed with malaria. She says even after taking some anti-malaria medicine, her son did not get well.
We came from Batil on Saturday. He was given medicine but did not get well. That is why I brought him here. We came from far and some of our people have not even arrived. The doctor say he's sick of malaria and anemia.
Mabang County authorities say several people are suffering from malaria and many have died from the disease in recent weeks. Abazar Odi, the Mabang County Health Officer, says the county has low supplies of medicine to fight malaria.
في الشهر الفاضل هو أكبر عدد ممكن هو زي عشرة.
In the last month alone, we saw high number of deaths, up to 10 people, because there is too much water in the last month. The good thing is that we held several meetings with UNICEF, IRC, and RELIEF. Last week, they sent us up to 30 cartons of malaria medicine, tablets, and injections.
He says huge number of people have been admitted in the hospital, and that has led to overcrowding in the wards. Wilson Seno, health manager with the International Rescue Committee, or IRC, which runs Poonch County Hospital, says the facility has seen an upsurge of malaria cases and death in recent months.
This year, since the month of July up to now, approximately 70 to 75% of the cases that we have been seeing in the outpatient department have been malaria cases. Most of the cases that we have been dealing with here have been from the host community. Big challenge that we have been having, especially with malaria, has been having frequent stockouts of anti-malarials. August, September, October, November, we've been receiving some supplies for UNICEF, but from UNICEF through ARI, but the demand has been quite high compared to the supply of anti-malarials.
Seno says more than 10 people have died to illnesses related to malaria and severe anemia in the month of October alone. VOA could not independently verify the cause of the reported fatalities in Mabang County. Mabang County is a home to 175,000 refugees who fled the conflict in Sudan. County authorities say the health services are partly stretched following the high influx of refugees in the area. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayer in Mabang County, Upper Nile State.
From South Sudan, we move to the Middle East, where a surge in attacks by Jewish settlers against Palestinian farmers is expected to reduce olive oil production in the West Bank. That's according to Palestinian Farmers Union. The union says the incidents have increased since the October 7 Hamas attacks on Israel and are preventing the harvest of thousands of olive trees located near the settlements. Ian Boshart has this story.
In the picturesque Palestinian village of Salfit, nestled in the northern West Bank, Jabal Abul Slimi, a seasoned farmer, is bracing for a challenging year. While his olive trees are thriving, he says he won't be able to harvest at least 30% of his groves. Like many Palestinian farmers, Slimi says he is too afraid to work on the farmlands that are close to the Jewish settlements around his village.
At the gunpoint, they demanded to put all the equipment for harvest in his truck and then demanded to put all the olives in his truck and told everybody to leave the area.
Since the October 7th attacks by Hamas militants on Israel, incidents against Palestinian farmers have surged in the West Bank. The United Nations says an average of 7 attacks a day have been registered since the beginning of the war between Israel and Hamas. Most of them are committed by Jewish settlers who don't want Palestinian farmers to get close to their settlements.
Here we are talking about 4,000 acres of olive groves that we are unable to harvest.
Lefi Shalabi is the mayor of Termus Aya, a Palestinian village that depends almost entirely on the olive oil production. He says that at least 60% of all olive trees here won't be harvested because the attacks have become too constant and too violent.
We have a lot of olive trees up there, but we can't go there. They closed everything.
This is a good example of what happens to the farmers here in the West Bank. All these trees are full of olives, but people here, they're too afraid to come and harvest them because, as you can see up there and all around, are Jewish settlements.
The Palestinian Farmers Union says that production this year will fall by at least 60%, both due to the attacks and because the climate is changing here. 110,000 families depend directly on the olive groves only in the West Bank.
Our estimations as a union, and we're the largest union in West Bank, you know, for farmers, between 50 to 55% of Palestinian farmers will be unable to harvest.
Olive production is the largest sector in the agriculture industry in the West Bank. Last year, farmers earned more than $120 million selling their olives and producing oil from it. This year, there will be less money for them. Yembo Esha, VOA News, Salfit, the West Bank.
Still on Middle East, Eilat, the southernmost town in Israel, became one of the main hubs for evacuees from areas under rocket barrage from Gaza since the October 7 attacks. Now the town has become the target of drone and missile attack. VOA's Natasha Mosgovaya reports.
When sirens warn of a rocket attack, residents of Eilat in southern Israel have about 30 seconds to get a shelter. But before a drone crashed into a school last week, there was no siren, just a whirring noise followed by an explosion. 12-year-old Gal Harari says most students had already left the building, with about 40 inside for after-school activities. She recalls the day of the drone attack, saying, "We were preparing in the past few days. We had a lot of drills, so the students knew what to do. We were lucky that nobody got hurt. It was a real miracle." The drone, which Israel Defense Forces say came from Syria, damaged the building. There were no injuries. The Israeli resort city of Eilat was supposed to become a safe shelter for over 60,000 people evacuated from towns and villages in southern Israel that were under rocket attacks from Gaza. Yet this city became the target of ballistic missiles fired by Houthi rebels from Yemen and also drones launched from Syria. One of those drones crashed into the elementary school building. Gal's mother, Sharon Harari, says she used to tell her daughter the school is the safest place because their family home doesn't have a shelter. Sharon Harari says, "I really thought it was the safest place and that the girls need to go to their routine of studies alongside the war and continue their lives. But unfortunately, it didn't happen because there was no siren and no alert. And if this happened, anything could happen." She says the conflict is taking its toll on the children. Sharon Harari says even when the kid is not physically hurt, he's psychologically hurt. And the kids here of all ages are scared. They don't sleep at night. They're afraid to go to the restroom by themselves. They're not going to play outside. Even though it looks pastoral with the sea and everything, it's all very pretty and we're trying hard. We're scared. Last week, the Israel Defense Forces said its long-range Arrow air defense system intercepted a surface-to-surface missile over the Red Sea, launched toward Eilat. The IDF did not say who was behind the missile, although Yemen's Iran-backed Houthi rebels claimed firing ballistic missiles toward southern Israel. Darin Ray's family is among the survivors of the October 7 attack on kibbutz near Oz by Hamas, a U.S.-designated terror organization. One-fourth of the community of 400 were among the victims. At least 20 people were killed and more than 70 kidnapped. She says Hamas was inside her family's home, but couldn't break into the fortified room where she, her husband, and their three kids were hiding, holding the door for 8 hours. The family evacuated to Eilat, which now is being targeted. For the surviving Nir Oz members, it will be years before they can return to their kibbutz if they decide to.
There is a plan that we go together to some place with buildings, that it's very different from our life, just for 2 or 3 years. And in the end, we're supposed to come back to the kibbutz after they will fix everything and make it renew. I don't know if I come back. Actually, I want to say that I don't come back because my kids are very scared. And also, my husband, we promised them all of their life, don't be scared. The soldiers is here. They're working as very hard for us, and they will never let something happen.
On October 7th, she says, nobody came. Natasha Mozgova, VOA News, Eilat, Israel.
And today, tens of thousands of protesters have gathered at the March for Israel here in Washington, D.C. Security is very tight around the National Mall near the U.S. Capitol, where demonstrators are gathering. The organizers say the march is intended to show support for Israel and to condemn anti-Semitism. The OA's Anthony Labruto is out on the mall, and we have him on the line now to tell us what's going on. Anthony, what sort of preparations are going on right now at the mall?
Hello, yes. So preparations have been going on the National Mall throughout the morning, and the first speakers are just actually starting to take the stage right now. So the media tent beside me is packed, and people have been starting to file in ahead of the 1 p.m. rally start time. So this rally is being organized by the Jewish Federation of North America and the Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations. And so unlike other rallies that we've covered in the past year, there's a much, much larger expected turnout. Around 60,000 people are expected to be here on the National Mall by that 1 p.m. start time. And so currently, as I kind of look out into the general area, there's about two full city blocks of people, or about a quarter mile full of pro-Israeli rally goers on the National Mall. So security here is also noticeably tighter, as you mentioned, with Washington Mayor Muriel Bowser calling for support from the U.S. National Guard, as well as the D.C. Metropolitan Police Force, blocking off many of the roads leading to and around the Capitol. So it's also important to note, too, that the Department of Homeland Security has designated this rally in particular to be a level one security event, which would typically be used for concerts, major sporting events. And so this allows the National Guard troops to really fill in and assist local law enforcement where they might need it.
And what do the organizers say is the goal of the rally?
The goal of this rally, in the direct words of the organizers themselves, is to express their support for Israel and to free the hostages that are still trapped, and also to combat anti-Semitism. And the organizers have also said further that the March for Israel specifically will be an opportunity for Americans to come together in solidarity with the people of Israel, to demonstrate commitment to what they say is the most important ally in the Middle East, and to condemn the rising trend of anti-Semitic violence and harassment within the country. Besides the Israeli and American flags, the most common thing that we've been seeing throughout the morning are paper signs and placards saying Americans against anti-Semitism.
Thank you, Anthony Labruto. That was my colleague Anthony Labruto, who is out there at the National Mall, where thousands of protesters have gathered in support of Israel. And that brings us to the end of our show for this Tuesday, November 14, 2023. We now leave you with Nanaya and the song Handkerchief.
Come on, mum, come on, debia. Into your nihoy, ama me chini siowa. Into your money me handkerchief, na mi suwa mi di apipa. Ota money me handkerchief.
Si mi suwa mi di apipa.
Money me handkerchief, na mi suwa mi di apipa.
We have been listening to Nanaya and the song Handkerchief. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Ustaz Zainab Abdurrahman, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Come on, what do I don't pass it?